10, chapter 47, the Song of the Bee. And we are reading text 43 through 47 today. Takim nisha smaratiya suttada priyabir. Vrindavane kumuda kundasha shankaramye. They make fananch charana nu pararasa goshtyam. Asmad bir idita manogya kata kadachit. Takim nisha smaratiyasu tada priyabir. Vrindavane kumuda kunda shashankas ramye. Reme kvananch charana nu pururasa gostyam. Asmadir idita manogya kata kadachit. Takim nisha smaratiyasu tada priyabhir. Vrindavane kumuda kunda shashankaramye. Remek vananch charana nu pararasa gostyam. Asmadir idita manogya kata kadachit.
Thank you.
those, Kim, weather, Nisha, nights, Smarati, he remembers, Yasu, in which, Tada, then, Priyabi, with his beloved girlfriends, Vrindavane, in the Vrindavan forest, Kumuda, because of the lotuses, Kunda, and jasmines, Shashanka, and because of the moon, Ramye, attractive, Reme, he enjoyed, Phanat, jingling, Charananupara, where the ankle bells, Rasa Gostyam, in the party of the Rasa dance, Asmabi, with us, Edita, glorified, Manogya, charming, Gata, topics about whom, Kadachit, ever. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Does he recall those nights in the Vrindavan forest, lovely with lotus, jasmine, and the bright moon, as we glorified his charming pastimes he enjoyed with us, his beloved girlfriends, and the circle of the Rasa dance, which resounded with the music of ankle bells? Purport. Srila Vishvanath Chakravarti gives the following deep realization about this verse. The gopis knew that no place could be as beautiful as Vrindavan. Nowhere else in the universe could one find such a charming scene as the Vrindavan forest, which was scented with pious flowers and illumined by the full moon's light reflected from the serene waves of the sacred Yamuna River. No one loved Krishna as much as the gopis, and thus no one else could understand him as well. The gopis rendered intimate service to Krishna that only they could perfect. Thus the gopis were distraught to think that Lord Krishna was bereft of Vrindavan and bereft of their service. Free of all material lust, they were overwhelmed with disappointment because they could not give Krishna happiness by their loving service. They simply could not imagine Krishna enjoying anywhere else as he did in Vrindavan in their company. And we'll read the next few verses, starting with text 44. Will that descendant of Disharha return here and by the touch of his limbs bring back to life those who are now burning with grief he himself has caused? Will he save us in that way, just as Lord Indra brings a forest back to life with his water-bearing clouds? But why should Krishna come here after winning a kingdom, killing his enemies and marrying the daughters of kings? He's satisfied there, surrounded by all his friends and well-wishers. The great soul Krishna is the lord of the goddess of fortune, and he automatically achieves whatever he desires. How can we forest dwellers or any other women fulfill his purposes when he's already fulfilled within himself? Report. Although the gopis lamented that Krishna was associating with the city women of Mathura, they now realize that as the absolute personality of Godhead, he had no need for any women. It's out of his causeless mercy that he awards his association to his loving devotees. And the last, text 47. Indeed, the greatest happiness is to renounce all desires, as even the prostitute Pingala has declared. Yet even though we know this, we cannot give up our hopes of attaining Krishna. Report, the story of Pingala is narrated in the 11th canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, a couple of years, we'll get to that. Om Gyanatim Randishya Gananjana Silakaya Chakshur Nithanina Tasma Shiva Venamaha Vanchakalpa Thirubhischa Kripasinda Vibhacha Patitanu Pavani Bhyo Vaishnavi Monamaha. So, every once in a while, as many speakers have done in the past, we sometimes break a little bit from the discussion of the specific content of the verse and talk a little bit about the process of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I just had a few thoughts on that I was thinking about as we approach these very lofty verses in this chapter of the Song of the Bee, and these wonderful verses spoken by Srimati Radharani and then by the gopis here. Incidentally, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that many of these different verses, they're all, it's a different gopi speaking, each one of these. I think volume needs to be up. It doesn't seem like it's loud enough, and it's really hard to keep the microphone from falling down. It doesn't continually. It's always falling down. Okay. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila in the 7th chapter, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions that all of the Vedic verses are described in as pertaining to three subject matters. So there's three broad classifications of all the Vedic knowledge that we are hearing. And those, of course, are Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So Sambandha is our relationship with the Supreme. It's a connection. Sambandha also means to connect with Krishna, to understand the philosophy. And so that understanding of spiritual knowledge is probably the best example is Bhagavad Gita, where the five subject matters are given of Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. In other words, the basic understanding of the Jiva soul and how we interrelate with both the material energy and the spiritual energy. This is basic Sambandha, the spiritual knowledge that we need to know to be able to come to Krishna. Then is the topic of Abhideya, which is our activities in devotional service. This is how we execute the process of bhakti. And of course, we find this in Nectar of Instruction. We find it in the first part of the Nectar Devotion specifically. And we talk about the different 64 processes, the 10 most critical ones, the 5 main exemplary processes of devotional service, all the ways that we practice Krishna consciousness. This is the topic of Abhideya. And of course, it's also found throughout the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and all the Vedic literatures. Then we have Prayojana. This is the perfection. This is pure, unalloyed devotional service, the culmination of all spiritual knowledge, which ends in Prayojana. And of course, this is discussed in some detail in the later parts of the Nectar Devotion, and also, of course, specifically in this 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So many of these topics that we are reading about are really under this classification of Prayojana, the perfection, pure, unalloyed devotional service, and as it's best exemplified by the residents of Vrindavan, and the highest understanding or the highest exemplary devotees in Vrindavan, of course, are the gopis and Radharani. So what we've been hearing is really the topmost perfection of devotional service, the highest, deepest ecstasies and mellows that can be appreciated by any jiva, any living entity. Of course, Radharani is not an ordinary living entity, even the gopis, but in other words, this is the perfectional state. If we would go throughout the entire material and spiritual universe, we'd find nothing higher than this. So therefore, sometimes it's a little difficult for us to speak on these topics with any authority and with any confidence. And we're usually much more comfortable when we're speaking about the other topics of Sambandha and Abhideya, because after many years of hearing the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, most of us have at least a basic intellectual understanding of how the material and spiritual energies are acting. Not that we necessarily fully realize it, but at least we have the basic grasp of that subject matter. And as far as the processes of devotional service, while we have certainly not perfected those, it's something that we daily live with and struggle with. So it's something that also is somewhat more in our comfort zone, talking about the process of executing devotional service, because it's something that we live with and something we know and deal with. But having not reached the stage of Prayojana, these topics are a little more difficult. We haven't reached the perfectional stage, which is what this is talking about. This is talking about devotional service when one has completed the process of sadhana and reached the ultimate goal. So therefore, it's a little more difficult for us to understand these more intimate subject matters of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But as neophyte devotees, we try to hear and appreciate according to whatever our capacity is. So I was thinking, what is the purpose? Why are we hearing these 10th canto pastimes? Why are we hearing, as what did Shanakarishi say yesterday, that this is above his pay grade? Is that something like that? Yes, that's a common expression where, in other words, this is something that's probably beyond most of our realization, but nevertheless, we are meant to hear these pastimes of Krishna. So why? Well, first of all, Hearing the topics of Prayojana, of the ultimate end, that gives us an end point to aspire to. Everyone wants to know what is the ultimate, what not everybody. An intelligent person who is seeking spiritual knowledge, who wants to know the absolute truth, wants to know what is the highest. You could say, well, you know, there's this, but, you know, just as Lord Chaitanya was, when he was speaking Ramana and Roy, kept saying, what's higher, give me more, give me more. So in this way, intelligent devotees want to know, well, what is the highest perfection? And so we see in the exemplary devotion and bhakti of the residents of Vrindavan, this is the highest standard. This is like the gold standard. This is what we should be attaining to. And this is at least gives us a goal that's there. Also, simply by hearing these pastimes, the mind becomes purified. Our Krishna consciousness becomes revived. In other words, whether we have the deepest realization of the pastimes of Krishna or not, we are benefiting. There's no question that we are deeply benefiting just by hearing about Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, which are non-different than him. So, I mean, it's to our benefit to hear about Krishna. And as we hear about Krishna, some attraction develops. The highest purpose of the Bhagavatam, beyond giving vast amounts of spiritual knowledge and the highest understanding of transcendental realization, is that it attracts people to Krishna's activities. The Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to attract the conditioned souls to Krishna. And that we see that this happens. We become a little bit attracted as we advance in Krishna consciousness, as we become a little bit purified, and sometimes even in the beginning we feel great attraction for Krishna. It's like I was thinking on Janmashtami, we were hearing the story of Krishna in the swan boat, or Krishna in the boat, and that whole pastime, and we were seeing the beautiful depiction of it in the form of the deities and like that. And who can doubt that we were attracted? You know, there was some attraction. It was very wonderful to hear. We don't fully understand the depths of the mellows of the Krishna and the gopis in his pastime, of course. But still, there's attraction. And that attraction is beneficial to the conditioned soul, you know, to advance in Krishna consciousness as we become more and more attracted to Krishna and thus unattracted to the material energy. And of course, Srila Prabhupada gave us the Krishna book, the 10th canto summary study in 1970, as we've mentioned before. Why did Prabhupada give us in 1970 when I wasn't even a devotee then? Those who were fairly neophyte, very new devotees. But Prabhupada wanted, well, first of all, of course, he had that spiritual foresight and knowing that he probably would not finish the Srimad Bhagavatam, would not be able to write all the purports, which was the fact of the 10th canto. So he wanted to make sure that he at least accomplished that. But he also wanted to give us Krishna. He wanted to give us the stories, the pastimes of Krishna for us to enjoy, for us to relish, and become attracted to Krishna. And at some level, of course, it happens. Right? You know, those old timers always like to talk about how, you know, in the evening over hot milk we read Krishna book or like that. I mean, people, you know, the old people would nod their head. You know, it was a standard ritual in ISKCON where we would, at night, we would read Krishna book as we had our little night prasadam, our hot milk, like that. And everybody remembers that very fondly. It's not just the hot milk, but, you know, it was the hearing Krishna book. Yeah, it wasn't that great. You know, but it was, you know, hearing about Krishna in association with devotees all coming together. It was just very, very sweet and very nice. You know, and we really got into those stories and those pastimes, and we relished them. I was actually even thinking on a personal level, the first book I received was Nectar Devotion, not the typical first book that a new person receives. It's a long story, but to make it very short, we were on in DeKalb, Illinois, which is the home of the campus of Northern Illinois University, and my wife, Montrini, and I were both going to school there. We were married at the time. And we both independently met devotees who came on campus. I think it's the only time they ever came to that campus. And they were looking for a place to stay, and my wife invited them to her home, and then I met them, and I invited them to her home, and said, well, we have two different, then they realized it was the same address. So anyway, they showed up, and they stayed with us, and they were, the next morning, of course, they gave a class, and we talked to them, and the leader of that Sankirtan party was Trista Ketu Prabhu, who is no longer with us, but he's my Bharatmavadarshana guru, so I hold him in the greatest respect. He helped bring me to Krishna consciousness. And they didn't have very many books, and they distributed all their books, and they didn't have any books left. So he gave me his personal copy of Nectar Devotion, that old original publication in that paperback, and I still have that. I bought a new one just so I wouldn't wreck that one, but I want to keep it and preserve it. But as we read the Nectar Devotion, you can imagine, I think we may have been chanting Hare Krishna a little bit, off of the record album, the Radha Krishna Temple album, we had that. But, we didn't really even know about Japa at that point. So, in other words, we were total neophytes, knew nothing about Krishna consciousness. And here we had Nectar Devotion. So you can imagine as we're reading through laughing ecstasies and the different, the primary rasas and the secondary rasas. And I remember at one point, Mantrini said to me, she says, I don't really understand this, but I know that they do and they know what's the truth, that this is it. And I said, yeah, absolutely. In other words, we didn't really fully understand it, but we appreciated there was something here that was extremely special. I mean, nobody described God in this way. What God does, what his pastimes are, what his loving relationships with his devotees are. I mean, usually, most religions, the relationship with man and God is fairly limited and not all that attractive. It has a lot to do with the wrath of God and things like that, which never really attracted me very much about the Judeo-Christian culture that I lived in. But this was different. This was something really wonderful. And because it was explained by Srila Prabhupada, by the pure devotee giving his purports, somehow or another, some of it penetrated. Some of it came to life for me. And even though I didn't really get it, completely, I knew this was something, not to be taken lightly, and had the deepest appreciation for Krishna and his pastimes and his devotees. And those great devotees who somehow understood this very esoteric understanding of a relationship with God. So we do become attracted to Krishna. There's no question about it. I was thinking in yesterday's class, there was a discussion about, how do we become happy? Are we really happy in Krishna consciousness? Can we really, in other words, our sort of existential problem as devotees is that we know this level, but we're at this level. It's kind of what I think Shanika was saying, that we're sort of in that middle ground, that purifying process, where we haven't fully realized this wonderful, ecstatic, absolute truth that's there, just almost, ready to be had, that we can't quite grasp yet. But at the same time, I don't find that discouraging, that we're not there, because we have so far to go. Every step farther that we make, every bit that we progress in Krishna consciousness, is going to bring us closer and closer to being able to actually enter into these pastimes, understand what's going on here with Krishna and the gopis and Krishna and Radharani, and somehow or another be able to appreciate fully on a higher level. And I think the second thing that I appreciate is that I think every devotee has some glimpse, has some taste. We wouldn't be here if we didn't. If we did not sometimes feel some of this ecstasy, some of this happiness, some of this realization that Krishna, by his mercy, and Srila Prabhupada, through his mercy, have given us, how would we stay for 40-some years? Because we have to have that higher taste. And that higher taste is there in the process of bhakti, in the process of hearing and chanting, in the 9 process of devotional service. We begin to understand a little bit about Krishna, and also the heart melts. The heart becomes softer. The heart opens up to Krishna, to allowing Krishna, Krishna's already there, but to realize that Krishna is there in the heart, and to open ourselves to that experience of Krishna. So I sometimes think about that if you look at the stage of devotional service, that nishtha seems to be the key one. That's the tough one, becoming steady, right? It's after nartanavritti, after we've overcome so many of those obstacles, so many of those anartas, those bad habits, then there's the stage of nishtha, steadiness. Now, what comes after nishtha? Rati, is it? Ashakti? Ruchi, I'm sorry. Good thing I have my audience here. Anyway, it's all the good stuff, right? It's all the taste of Krishna consciousness. It's all the taste of devotional service and love of Krishna. We just have to reach that point of steadiness in our sadhana, and then everything else opens up from there, sequentially. You know. So anyway, hearing about Krishna, becoming attracted to Krishna through these pastimes of the 10th canto will help us to reach that stage, will help us to become steady and fixed in our Krishna consciousness, understand what that goal is, to keep striving for that, and keep us moving forward in Krishna consciousness. Okay, that was the preamble. Today's verse, the very first verse I'm going to speak about, which had the more lengthy purport, is talking about Krishna and Vrindavan. Now, the gopis have been talking about many subject matters, about their relationship with Krishna, and Krishna and the ladies in Mathura, and their relationship with him, and going through this whole range of emotions, which we've heard about for many days. But now they're specifically talking about Krishna in Vrindavan. And they're thinking, even if Krishna were somehow or another happy with these ladies in Mathura, which they can hardly imagine how, still, how could he be happy not in Vrindavan? And that's actually true. Because Krishna never leaves Vrindavan in one sense, of course we know that. And the holy Dham is such an important, critical factor. Because Krishna is non-different from his holy Dham, he's non-different from his pastimes, and all of his spiritual manifestations. So Krishna and Vrindavan are non-different. When Krishna comes to this material world once in a day of Brahma, and he manifests his pastimes, he manifests Vrindavan and Mathura and Dwarka and all the holy Dhams. This is part of Krishna's incarnation, part of Krishna's coming. He doesn't come without his Dham. Lord Ramachandra comes as Ayodhya. You know, in other words, you know, Lord Chaitanya, the holy Dhams of Navadvip, are there. Mayapur Navadvip, which is non-different than Krishna, than Vrindavan, in one sense. So he always is there with his Dham, and the Dham is very, very important, and the gopis are bringing out this point. Of course, to them, they are attracted eternally to Vrindavan because it is a place of great sweetness and a place of their pastimes that they are relishing with Krishna. So it's totally intertwined for them. So we may not see quite on that level, but still we can understand the importance of these holy Dhams, the importance of the places of Krishna's pastimes to us. Of course, the Nectar of Instruction, verse 9, says, the holy place known as Mathura is spiritually superior to Vaikuntha, the transcendental world, because of the Lord appeared there. Superior to Mathurapuri is the transcendental forest of Vrindavan, because of Krishna's Rasa Lila pastimes. Superior to the forest of Vrindavan is Govardhan Hill, for it was raised by the divine hand of Sri Krishna and was the site of his various loving pastimes. And above all, the super excellent Sri Radhakun stands supreme, for it is overflooded with the ambrosial nectarian prema of the Lord of Gokula, Sri Krishna. Where then is that intelligent person who is unwilling to serve this divine Radhakun, which is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill? So we have from the highest authorities that these are indeed the highest places. Highest, not just places of pilgrimage, but the highest places of Krishna's pastimes. And of course, Rupa Goswami speaks about these places of pastime in ascending order. In other words, they become higher and higher depending upon how closely connected they are to these wonderful pastimes of Krishna and the gopis. So that's why he's saying, Radhakund is the highest, because, of course, it's the place of Radharani and the gopis. So, for all of us, we can't underestimate the importance of the holy Dhams. In the Brahmanda Purana, it is said that all the results of traveling on all the pilgrimages within the three worlds can be achieved simply by touching the holy land of Mathura. In many shastras, it is said that simply by hearing, remembering, glorifying, seeing, or touching the land of Mathura, one can achieve all desires. Most of these are from the Nectar Devotion, chapter 12. Now, this is from 7.4.22, Srimad Bhagavatam purport. Prabhupada says, on this earth, there are places such as Vrindavan and Ayodhya, which are called Dhams. In the Dham, there is no influence from Kali Yuga or any demon. If one takes shelter of such a Dham, worship of the Lord becomes very easy, and the resultant spiritual advancement quickly takes place. In fact, in India, one may still go to Vrindavan and similar places to achieve the results of spiritual activities quickly. So great importance in performing spiritual activity in the Dham. Of course, we know that residing in the holy Dham is one of the five principal Angas, the arms of devotional service. So it's mentioned there very prominently, to live in the holy Dham. So there are many, many verses and purports like this. We could read them, you know, for quite some time. They glorify the holy Dham, the importance of the Dham, and why such great spiritual benefit is given by reciting the Dham or even doing service in the Dham. So one question might be asked, and why do we not all live in the holy Dham? Why do we not all live in Vrindavan or Mayapur or Jagannath Puri? Or why does a devotee leave Vrindavan? Srila Prabhupada lived in Vrindavan for many years, residing in Radha Damodar Temple at the feet of Rupa Goswami. What could be more wonderful? And Prabhupada talked about that, the ecstatic feeling he had in Radha Damodar, living in Vrindavan, in that holy realm. First of all, the devotee, even if he leaves Vrindavan, the pure devotee carries Vrindavan with him. Because Vrindavan is not just a physical place, right? It's spiritual. It's a spiritual connection. So Vrindavan can also be within the heart. Prabhupada says in 10.130 in a purport, there are many devotees who vow never to leave Vrindavan and Mathura. This is undoubtedly a good vow, but if one leaves Vrindavan, Mayapur, or Mathura, or Navadvip for the service of the Lord, he is not disconnected from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when Prabhupada came to America, that connection with Vrindavan was always there. He carried Vrindavan in his heart. This is the situation of the pure devotee. But they're not connected. They're never disconnected. And also, we need to understand that because Krishna manifests his Dham wherever he is being glorified, wherever he is being served, that the temples of the Lord are non-different than Krishna's abode. In a letter to Sarvamangala, Bombay, 1974, Srila Prabhupada said, you should know that in our temples, they are not in this material world. The temple is Vaikuntha, where Krishna is remembered and served 24 hours daily without stopping. So we are already in Vaikuntha by participating in temple activities, so it must be done very nicely. So it's a good reminder to us that we are in New Ramanreti, which is non-different than Ramanreti, in the sense that Radha Shyama Sundar is being, and Krishna Balaram and Gaurini Thai are being worshipped in the same way. Excuse me. Excuse me. That was not an ecstatic emotion. So we are here in the holy Dham of New Ramanreti. And just like all of our temples that Srila Prabhupada established, our holy places, because the hearing and chanting of Krishna is going on, the worship of Krishna as Archivigraha, deity form, is going on. In this way, it is the spiritual world. So the spiritual world, in one sense, is a state of consciousness. It's a state of being connected with Krishna. I mean, not that it's impersonal. The holy Dhams are real places that have real value and have real power and real Shakti to give us devotional service, to purify us. You know, but that same spiritual energy can be found throughout the world. We just celebrated these wonderful festivals of Janmashtami and Vyas Puj. And I was thinking over these couple days, you know, many things, we had many different experiences, but to me a very prominent experience was a little bit of realization that this is the spiritual world. You know, and this is one of the reasons we have these celebrations, why we celebrate these special days. Because it puts us more in touch. It makes us a little closer to Krishna, a little closer to Prabhupada, and focuses our attention and our minds upon them a little more deeply. At one point in the evening on Janmashtami, I was outside there and I was in between two different kirtans. There was a kirtan on the stage and there's a kirtan in Lord Jagannath's temple. There's a kirtan going on in the temple. It's actually kind of right in the center between three kirtans. And there's a big line of devotees doing abhishek, you know, doing bathing the deities. You know, and there was a couple of discourses going on, what to speak of the village of Vrindavan. You know, here we had Vrindavan almost practically manifesting to us here in Alachua, Florida. And then I came in, of course, and saw the beautiful deities, Radha Shyamasundar, Krishna Balaram, Shishi, Ranitai, and just realized that this was the spiritual world. How is this different than the spiritual world? Everything in Vrindavan is going on. And of course, it's there all the time, but you know, sometimes we can see it a little more. Krishna gives us a little bit more nectar, a little bit more ability to appreciate these holy dhams at times like this. So, for the devotee, of course we should worship the holy dhams, and we should take opportunities to go to the holy dham. Every devotee should. And we should spend some time, get that purification in the holy dham. Sometime I'd like to go to the holy dham and actually step outside of a GBC meeting room and see the holy. But anyway, that's another story. But the holy dhams are there for us, and Prabhupada wanted them to be established. What's the first thing that Prabhupada wanted to build at Mayapur? Practically before the temple, wasn't it? The guest house? Yeah. I mean, wasn't that, I mean, in other words, Prabhupada's mood always was, these need to be places for people to come to, for the pilgrims. Not just for not just for a few residents to be there, but places to bring people. And what to speak of now when we have these wonderful projects. And we know when the Ambarish Prabhu was speaking about the Temple of Vedic Planetarium yesterday, that we know that hundreds and thousands and millions of visitors will come when that's completed. There's already, do you know, Janmashtami, how many people visit Mayapur each year? The managers were telling me, and I was just, it was staggering, a couple million or something? There's like, maybe 2 million visitors there already. What to speak of when that temple is built? We'll attract people from all over the world. So, yes, we should visit the holy dhams, we should appreciate them, but we should also, as Srila Prabhupada did, try to keep Vrindavan within our heart, and wherever we are, see that Vrindavan atmosphere, see that we are in the holy dhams in these temples, and we want to give that Vrindavan atmosphere, we want to give that, which is really pure devotional service, is what the Vrindavan atmosphere is, we want to be able to give that to others and bring hundreds and thousands of people to these temples, to these holy dhams, to also appreciate and benefit and take up the process of Krishna consciousness. Okay. Stop at that point. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Krishna. Any questions or comments? I've been reminded recently to also make sure that we look on the other side of the room, see if there's any comments or questions. Okay. Go ahead, Jamastani and Tripakam.
Prabhu, I'm wondering if you could speak your realizations of what's the best way to accelerate our advancement, get to that prayojana. I mean, we've got the scriptures, but I think all of us get ideas, about how to do it, where to go.
Well, it's a great question. I wish it had been asked of a better speaker to have a better answer for you. I obviously have very limited realization on that, but I can say a couple of things. The question is basically, how do we make spiritual advancement towards the eventual goal of pure devotional service? And my very simple realization is that we simply follow those instructions Srila Prabhupada has given us, because Prabhupada gave us the path. He gave us the process of sadhana bhakti, which will lead to the practice of Krishna consciousness through following the regulated path of sadhana, leads eventually to the path of spontaneous devotional service to Raganuga, and eventually to the higher stages of devotional service. So usually when we're not feeling so much of the higher, nectar, the rasas, the bliss, because we're not doing the basics. It's not that, I'm stuck here in the basics and I got those all down, but I'm not getting to the, the real good stuff, to the nectar, to the more advanced stuff. It doesn't work that way. We actually get to the higher stage of devotional service through the process of sadhana and through the process of pleasing Krishna by pleasing the spiritual master and following his instruction. So I find for me that when I feel, any time when I feel a little stuck in my Krishna consciousness, or we all have those times where sometimes we're feeling like we're really feeling very, very good and positive and advanced in Christian consciousness, making a lot of progress, sometimes we feel not so much, or we're a little bogged down, or, you know, kind of like in a rut. I think every devotee goes through that, don't they? I mean, you know, I've always found that it usually comes down to my hearing and chanting. If I'm not feeling, you know, very ecstatic, or I feel kind of in a rut, it's probably because I think I'm so busy, you know. We all think, oh, I'm so busy doing such important things that we may be neglecting really chanting well and really taking the time to read extra and to hear the Bhagavatam and hear the philosophy. At least that's my own realization, is usually that if we really focus on the most basic fundamental, and service, of course, on those fundamentals of Krishna consciousness, then we make advancement towards the higher stages. And we see that and we feel that as time goes on. I don't know if anyone has a better answer or better realization on that. Happy to hear what other people have a secret to how to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Tirukar Prabhu, you can help us out.
No, I'm not on this point. I'm just change topic a little bit. The scene that's been described in Vrindavan, in the Bhagavatam, and the scene that's in Vrindavan now seems to be vastly different. But so for a newcomer, he may not be able to comprehend. But if you could shed some light into that. I mean, Vrindavan still holds the sacredity, you know.
Yeah. In other words, if we go to Vrindavan today, we don't see it like we're reading it in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam as the gopis are describing it here. Well, of course, two things. It's Kali Yuga and the progress of Kali Yuga. Everything degrades. What does it describe that, you know, the three, you know, most important things, the Yamuna River, the dust of Vrindavan, and the Govardhan Hill. Govardhan Hill is gradually reducing. The Yamuna River is drying up, and only the dust of Vrindavan will remain. So that's an unfortunate part of the progress of Kali Yuga, and we also see things become more and more covered. But there's also this principle of the Dham being covered. In other words, for one who has real spiritual vision, they will be able to see the Dham in this way. Unfortunately, as we often have material vision, we don't really see all the wonderful, you know, beauty that's there because of the current Kali Yuga material situation. Which is unfortunate, you know. But if one just sincerely tries to serve in the Dham and to try to appreciate the Dham and hear and chant, then some of that realization will come. Some of that realization of what the Dham really is will come to one. But it's somewhat hidden, somewhat covered at this point. Yeah. See, Hari Prayana?
As you were going through the verse, I was reminded of another verse, actually a few verses, to the start of the Rasa Dance. Hmm. And there, you know, the No? So here it was Taha Nisha, those nights. Okay, and in the 29th chapter, first verse, this is part of the dance. Taha Ratri are used, those nights. And then here, the moon's described, the jasmine flowers, the lotus flowers. And then in those verses, 29.1-3, Shukadeva Goswami talks about Shri Krishna, full in opulences, yet upon seeing those autumn nights scented with blossoming jasmine flowers, turned mind affairs. Then the second verse describes the moon in great detail, how the moon rose, it had the reddish hue of Krishna's comforting rays, and how it was like a beloved husband who returns after a long absence and adorns the face of his beloved wife with red kumkum. And in the third verse, Lord Krishna saw the unbroken disk of the full moon as if it were the face of the goddess of fortune. He also saw the kuma, the lotuses, which mentioned today in that verse, opening in response to the moon's presence and the forest illumined by its rays. Then he began to play sweetly on his flute, attracting the minds of the beautiful-eyed group. I was struck by how similar, I mean, they're basically referring to those verses. This verse is referring to those verses in every, you know, aspect.
Yeah, there, it seems as though there's these basic elements of Vrindavan which come up over and over again. You know, the flowers, the trees, the moon, the, you know, it's very basic elements. And what's interesting is that it's often contrasted with the opulence of the city. Like even the gopis are talking about the opulence of Mathura and the city and like that. But these more simple, rural or, you know, pastoral scenes of the trees, the forest, the river, the flowers, this is the real opulence. This is the greatest beauty, you know, in the, that can't be compared with. And as you said, these descriptions come up over and over. It looks like we're out of time at this point. One more? Book of Anita? All right. Okay. Sorry, I didn't see it. He had the mic, though. Right?
Not to be off topic, but, you know, there are a lot of Russian devotees, right? Mm-hmm. You probably know better. How many are there?
Tens of thousands.
Really a lot, right?
Yeah.
And we see them in the Dham when we go there.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? What is it about them that they're so attracted to this Krishna? Why do they take to it so?
I really don't know. Well, people all over the world have been attracted. There's thousands of Chinese devotees. Most of them are, you know, a little bit underground, but they're there's hundreds and hundreds even of initiated Chinese devotees. There's thousands of. You know, it's like in America, you know, when so many devotees were coming. Now Russia is kind of like in that stage where, you know, after everything opened up, you know, after the sort of the fall of communism, I think it was like a time is ripe. Just like in the 60s and 70s, yeah. The time is ripe in America. Yeah. So the time is ripe for those people to take up Krishna consciousness.
You also feel such camaraderie with one another when you see them. You're so intimately in love with each other.
It's amazing how all over the world. I mean, I was talking to a devotee who's a regional secretary or something in Ukraine, and I said, how many devotees are there in the Ukraine? He said, oh, there's about 3,000. You know, I mean, it's everywhere. It's amazing. Okay. Adige, if you think wanted to say something, then we should probably end.
No, I was just going to say that although with our mundane vision we can't always see the beauty that we read about in Srimad Bhagavatam in relationship with Vrindavan. But one thing we can see, I think, is the devotion that's there. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, you'll see, I mean, just walking on the paths, you know, some woman carrying water into a temple or someone worshiping Tulsi, or you hear a conch shell, you hear a kirtan, and that's still there. It's still going on.
That's a really good point, and the devotion is there. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.